Hi, my name is Scott.
And I am Zach.
Welcome to Learning Ground.
Episode 4, in which we speak to Sarah.
Sarah is a member of the Learning and Teaching cohort, and she happens to be a member of the Instructional Leadership Strand.
We talked to Sarah a little bit about looking at student work and how an otherwise lengthy process might be adapted to fit in the time that teachers have in the classroom and possibly used with kids.
So if you've got a cup of coffee handy, this conversation lasts one cup of coffee. That's right. When one of us finishes our cup of coffee, the conversation is over.
Hint, it's me. So get your cup of coffee ready and welcome to Learning Ground.
Thanks for listening.
Right.
This is a different iPod than you're usually using, right?
I'm trying to mess, just move it around. Okay, yeah. So, three cups of coffee means it's time for another episode.
It's that time of week again.
So,
we tried to do the recording the first time.
You will never hear that.
And it didn't work, so I'm going to recycle all the jokes that I used in the first two
minutes. Were so good the first time.
Thank you. I just want people to hear them.
Scott, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking this time caffeinated. Usually I go decaf, but this time a caffeinated 101 blend with two shots of hazelnut and cream.
Yep, from Pete's Coffee.
From Pete's this time.
And I'm also drinking a 101 blend, which is a blend of several South American coffees.
Which shouldn't be confused with South Africa.
Who would do that? and our guest today is Sarah. Sarah, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a hot chocolate with the little whipped cream on top.
That's outstanding.
I went with hot chocolate with 2% milk. There was no specification, I realized.
Is that right?
The option was given to me. Do you want hot chocolate with whole milk? Do you want it with 2% skim? And I blanked, and
you
there was a long line.
Of the road.
I did.
That was very
okay?
Wise.
Medium is vanilla is my default when I don't know what to make a choice. Sarah, what program are you in here at the Harvard Graduate School of Education?
I am in learning and teaching in instructional leadership.
I just learned that learning and teaching had strands,
which I did not know. I did, however, inform Zach. He also didn't know they had gang signs, which I knew.
That's right.
Because I've hung around with the learning and teaching people for a while. I didn't know they had strands, though.
How many strands are there?
Two.
Okay.
And so they are...
There's instructional leadership.
Right.
And general.
So really, there's a
subsection.
A subsection and then the normal section.
Yeah.
So there's instructional leadership and then...
Right.
So,
okay.
So the learning and teaching program, am I certified to teach after I get through that program?
No, you're not.
Okay. So what is the point, I guess, of entering into the program if it doesn't bring me certification?
There are a lot of options for classes, so I think a lot of people join it for the flexibility.
Okay.
This is a theme we've had before for
what?
Certain programs.
Flexibility. Everybody's looking for flexibility and choice.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely. I was very interested in learning and teaching because of the instructional leadership.
Okay.
Because my professional goal is to become the chair of a science department.
Okay.
So I knew that I would get some great classes in science education, as well as some leadership classes, as well as some pedagogies. So it was going to be good.
Now, when you say chair of a science department, are you talking about at a like public school level, high school, or a university level, or?
Wow, no one's ever asked me that before.
Really?
Really?
We're that good.
Yeah.
That is how good we are.
We are seasoned professionals.
It's the university level that caught me off guard.
Oh, really?
Yes. But
have you not thought about it?
Well, here's the funny thing, is that this morning I went into my classroom in Longfellow, and there was a gentleman there from the technology department, and I put my things down by where I usually sit, but that was also by the teacher desk. So he goes, oh, are you the professor?
Nice.
Right?
How'd that feel? Did it feel natural?
I was very
Did
happy.
You think, I can be someday?
Yeah.
I will be someday.
I thanked him for the compliment.
Okay.
That's nice.
For sure.
So wait, that is sidestepping the question.
It is.
What's the goal?
I think that I'll probably be a chair of a science department in a middle school, high school setting.
Okay.
That's cool. Really what I could say.
Where have you taught before?
Indian Mountain School.
Okay.
It's in Lakeville, Connecticut. It's a small junior boarding school.
Boarding school?
Yes, boarding school.
What does junior boarding school mean as opposed to just boarding school?
So most boarding schools are high schools that go 9 through 12 or like a PG year, postgraduate. Mm-hmm. But in a junior boarding school, we actually have boarding students from sixth grade through ninth grade.
Really?
And then we kick them out and they go off to high school.
Okay. And nice. Do most of those students go to a regular boarding school after that? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that I would imagine the transition from a boarding school into kind of a traditional school setting would be quite jarring.
It could be. We actually have about half and half. Half of our students are boarding students and half are day students. So the boarding students see a lot of the day student culture. So even if they don't go to a boarding school.
Okay.
They
so there's a mix. There's kind
like
of a hybrid.
Commuter sort
yes.
of people.
Yes.
So did you go to boarding school when you were?
I did not.
Okay.
No.
How did you find yourself there? I mean, was that a goal?
Nope. Actually, when I was in college, I thought that the last thing that I would do would be teaching in a classroom with four walls. I was much more of the mindset of being in the experiential learning, Nature's Classroom or Knowles, that type of environment. And
can you explain Knowles for a second for anybody who doesn't know?
What does it stand for?
Oh, you don't need to say what it stands for, but just kind of give a background of why that is a thing.
So Knowles is an outdoor education group that runs programs that are fairly long-term when you think about outdoor education. Mm-hmm. So it's not just three nights in the woods and you're done. They really expect a commitment from their students to be in a program for a week and a half, 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Okay.
And it's very much group-oriented, very much goal-oriented. A lot of outdoor skills that are learned, but a lot of sustainability and caring for the place that you are currently at and how to travel from one location to another by various modes of transportation. Usually those that are powered by your own self and not a motor.
So like a boat.
Like a kayak or canoe or your
You
feet.
Can't be a motorboat.
No.
It has to be a canoe or a kayak or something that you paddle. One of the swans that has the little paddle boat.
Oh, I want one of those.
I think that's probably their most popular program.
I would imagine.
Swan trip.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Travel by swan. So you didn't end up. You didn't go that route.
I didn't end up there, and that is all due to a wonderful summer job that I had at the Tabor Academy summer program. Tabor Academy is a fairly well-known private boarding school down near Cape Cod in Massachusetts. And I worked in their summer program for 4 summers. And the executive director of that program really became a mentor for me and said, after a couple summers, Sarah, you have the residential experience from college and from our camp, and you have coaching experience, and you really love the outdoors, so you have that science background. That's what we call the triple threat in the boarding school community.
You don't suck at this job. You should probably do it.
Yeah.
I wish that is how they said it.
Right.
Sarah, it's come to our attention that you don't suck at this. Maybe there's a future. We like people who aren't horrible.
Yeah. Exactly. We want to support them.
Yeah, I'm executive director because I give really good backhanded compliments. So they said, come do this, and the lure was just too much?
Well, I thought, give it a shot. Why not? Uh-huh. I had already committed to working for AmeriCorps for a year, mm-hmm. so I did that. But while I was there, it also came to my attention that I was doing a lot of background programming, or not program, but programming for their camp. And not technology programming.
Like curriculum.
Like outdoor curriculum and organization and all that for a camp. And I saw the relationship that the kids, these mentees had with their mentors. And I realized that if I was going to really affect any change and have a great impact on students and young people, that having a long-term relationship would be a better choice, and I could see that happening at a school setting.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's kind of what led you into that. Back to where you had come from.
Yes.
From whence the prodigal daughter returns kind of thing.
Yeah, sort of. Exactly.
So, that's enough about you.
That was a lot about me.
So, what are you learning? Like, I mean, so you're in the program, you're in second semester, you have the flexibility of classes. So, what are you learning about right now? What's really in your brain?
So, I'm taking three classes and an FAP, a field experience program.
Okay.
And so, my three classes include looking at student and teacher work with Tina Blythe. Okay. And that's been really great. And I will explain why in a moment. But the other classes are actually with Scott, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
The other two?
That is correct.
Yes.
I believe that.
We spend all Friday together.
It's exciting.
Well, and then I get them.
That's true. That's true. We come over here and record usually. Today's actually a Tuesday.
Yeah, but nobody needs to know that, Scott.
That's true. Sorry.
Don't give out all of our secrets.
I don't know anybody. It just doesn't seem authentic now. they would have just wondered what the delay. Anyways, moving on. We have Tina Grosser, who teaches T543, which is
cognitive science and learning and teaching.
Wow.
Yes.
And T560 with David Rose, which is
Universal Design for Learning.
We talked about that a lot in the last episode.
Oh, really? Yeah, oh, fantastic. Who did you have in the last episode?
We had Vanessa.
I don't know if I've met Vanessa.
Vanessa Generelli, who was not in that class.
Way to use the last name.
It's okay. She's all over the place.
She's all over the place. Everyone knows.
Yeah, everyone knows. I mean, we said exactly where she works.
That's true. We gave away lots about her.
But she's not in UDL, but we talked about kind of Scott's experiences with UDL. It was really interesting to talk about kind of interface. So talk a little bit about the experiencing student work?
Looking at.
I made it too technical.
There's no experiencing. They're taking it and looking at it.
Yeah.
But really, that's good. That is an excellent point, actually, because a lot of times we think that we have to get these really, really deep, insightful things out of work. And like, there must be something so amazing going on. And usually there is, but it's because of the most obvious observations.
So can you explain, like, what's an example of something that you've seen?
So we are running multiple protocols, so lots of sort of sets of the way that we go through looking at student work and teacher work. Some of it's teacher work. So we often take moments to really look at it, to take our take in the work. The first time we did a collaborative assessment protocol, we probably took, I'd say, like 7 to 8 minutes just to look at a kindergartner's painting and then describe objectively what we saw.
Okay.
So
it's that O word that I think most people have the problem with.
It's incredibly difficult because instead of saying something like, if you see what many people could perceive as the sun in a sky, like a painting of a sun in a sky, we wouldn't say sun or sky.
Okay.
You would say, I observe that there is a round yellow object that is surrounded by a lot of blue paint.
Okay.
In the art history world, we call this a formal analysis.
Are you an art historian?
That was my major in college.
Really?
Yes.
Who knew?
Not me.
Not me either.
Many people don't know these
things. We spend a lot of time with Scott and we don't know that.
I'm a very secretive, mysterious person.
You know, actually, I think that's true.
You just fade into the background.
Yeah. I mean, I just many secrets. I wear a leather jacket often, and I'm like a motorcycle hood, but like a motorcycle hood with a heart of gold. That, like, you know, there was terrible things happening in my childhood, and like, I'm really just very misunderstood, and I'm probably going to.
So you're a rebel without a cause.
I'm probably going to end up with Brenda by the time the season is out.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I'm sorry. I see what you're doing there.
You know what I mean?
I didn't realize you were going 90210.
Yeah, you kind of have to. I mean, I don't have my hairspray.
You need some sideburns.
I do need some sideburns.
So wait, what do they call it in the art history world?
Well, so it's called a formal analysis, and a formal analysis, if you take a look at, we'll just say a two-dimensional frame, you will describe the form or forms within present within that two-dimensional frame, trying to be absent the context.
Okay, so it's formal analysis, not in juxtaposition to informal analysis,
right?
But literally talking about the forms that you see.
Exactly.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
He's so on? I know nothing.
Layers.
Yes.
He's an onion.
Yeah. So you're looking at this kindergartner's piece of work, mm-hmm. and people are you having difficulty keeping it in the objective, or?
Yes, it's hard. There was a what seemed to be a building. People would talk about the door or the window. Can't say it. So you would have to instead describe a large brown rectangular
shape. Can you get away
shape.
With large?
No. It would have to be a rectangular shape that is taking up perhaps a quarter of the painting space.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
it's tough.
Yeah, I can
and
imagine so.
What we ended up, what I really recognized when doing that is that we ended up with a completely different vocabulary in order to be able to describe and still communicate with each other. Because all of a sudden, everyone would start saying the same way to describe the building.
Okay.
So that, we would talk about that brown rectangular object that's taking up about a quarter of the space.
And you would agree upon the
and,
rhetoric.
Yeah, and then you know you just keep saying it in the same way, and people pick up on that. So I thought that was very interesting.
So this is a kindergartner's painting.
Yep.
And you are not a kindergarten teacher.
I am not, no. Middle school science.
Nor are you a kindergartner at this point in time.
Right.
Which is
good to know.
Yeah.
We didn't specify that earlier.
No, we didn't.
So I guess the question is, so what's the point of that exercise?
Well, the observation is just the start of this protocol.
Okay.
And what you end up going into is you go into questions, things that this piece of work really make you think about. So you have sentences that start with, I wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, when you're doing it with a group of 20 people, there are some really great questions out there. I love that it's bringing in so many perspectives.
Okay.
And I think that is where the learning for everyone that's sitting around looking at the work really starts.
Okay.
Like, I am hearing all these great questions, and I never would have thought of all of them on my own.
So how does... So I'm thinking about then going back into a classroom setting, mm-hmm. a traditional classroom setting.
Yep.
Right? Boarding school or non-boarding school, mm-hmm. teachers' lives are...
Busy,
right? I mean, it's piled upon. I mean, the idea of having time where I could do it by myself and look at a piece of student work
mm-hmm.
and go through that protocol is minimal.
Yeah.
And then, but the idea of having other members of my faculty around me while I was doing that, it seems an impossible task. Do you talk about these things in the course?
Yes, and in a lot of the readings that we've been approaching, it really is... Excuse me, I'm losing my voice all of a sudden. This darn hot chocolate, what
I
did
know,
you put in here?
It's all the rum I had to add.
Gosh darn it, I asked for Irish babe. So what we end up recognizing is that this is time consuming.
Right.
And you have to recognize that before you even start. But what you get out of it and the conversation that comes from not just looking at one piece of student work, but looking at student work over time.
Right.
Looking at student work, like multiple pieces from the same day, looking at one piece over a month, or
right.
one piece a day over a month, you can really see what type of learning is happening in that location. So I think it's incredibly valuable, and when the time is taken, it's definitely, there's a give and take,
mm-hmm.
but there's not a lot that can match it.
You have to make that space.
Commitment.
I mean, because if you're only going to do it for, say, 5 minutes, there's no point.
Exactly.
I mean, you've wasted both that 5 minutes and the exercise itself.
Yes, I would say that half an hour at least.
Okay.
And usually we run them between half an hour to 45 minutes.
So this sounds actually, Scott, like it'd be something that relates to your teaching background, because I know you worked with some special needs kids.
Yes.
And I would imagine that in those type of settings,
mm-hmm.
and with that kind of additional services, there's maybe a little bit more room or a little bit more pressure to look more closely at what kids are creating. Is that a fair shake or
no? Well, so what I would, at least within the framework of the school and the state and the program within which I was working, my students had either one particular, they would have a particular case manager,
mm-hmm.
and then they would have their classroom teachers, and then generally they would also, depending on their IEP, individualized education plan, they would have an aide or a series of aides that would help them throughout the day. And for those students who had one person that they were working with throughout the day, these were middle school students, so they would be moving from class to class, but that aide would be going with them. Being familiar with that particular student's mode of creating whatever it may be,
right.
Whether it was, you know, creating a social space to be in versus, you know, writing anything down, familiarity was so key. And when a sub would come in for a day or something like that, things would simply not go well,
right.
often, which I found really, really interesting. I definitely think that there is something to be said for having the flexibility or being able to build in the flexibility of devoting time to understanding a learner.
Yeah.
So difficult.
Well, and it's interesting. So you telling that story kind of reminds me. I was in a general education classroom, inclusive program, right? And a couple of different years, we would have students who had full-time aides traveling around with them. Mm-hmm. They got paid much less than a classroom teacher got paid. But their job was to write down literally everything that student did mm-hmm. throughout the entire day.
Wow.
Pages and pages every day.
Of notes, yeah.
And it was all handwritten. And this was to hand to the supervisor to whom they reported to justify their position. Look, I'm doing my job, right? And so I think largely the district saw it as a covering of asses to say, look, no, we've provided the services as detailed as possible.
Right.
What was interesting to me, and I hadn't thought of this until now, is as that student's or those students' classroom teachers, we never looked at those notes. Nor were we ever offered to look at those notes.
Right.
Yeah.
We had no access to them. And I don't know if I would have been allowed to see them if I had asked. But think about what that would mean as a classroom teacher.
That's
right? You know every day somebody has created page after page of exactly what at least one of your students is doing.
And you're not going to see that information.
And you will never see that information.
And that's really interesting because that's what we really struggle with in this class is like how are we ever going to be able to follow a student
right.
and be able to sort of document their work and really value it, but we've got an entire classroom.
Right.
So in your situation, you had the person who was documenting the
right.
work, but you still didn't get to see it.
Right.
Ugh.
And it's like, if I mean, what was really interesting, I mean, that reminds me of another situation. So in a situation, I had a student who, one of his classes, he had probably 4 or 5 classroom teachers throughout the day for probably about 7 classes. One of his classes was Science 8. This is an 8th grade science class. And at the beginning of the year, I was team teaching Science 8 at this point with like a master teacher, myself, special ed staff who was an aide, and I got together with the supervisor, special ed supervisor. And we all got together. And we had a meeting at the beginning of the year about one particular student. And we said, how can we integrate the work that the aide's actually going to do in the classroom,
right.
i.e. the copious amounts of notes, or this particular student happened to be very autistic and so wasn't able to write very much,
mm-hmm.
But was able to complete tasks rather well. He had good manual dexterity, things like that. Besides writing, he had reasonably good manual dexterity, good bodily awareness, and so was able to complete tasks. We got together at the beginning of this year and said, okay, taking into account what we know about this student, because he's been followed and the special ed staff have taken notes on him
right.
every 3 months, and they've said what he's capable of, what we want him to be capable of, what his goals are and can be. Taking into account what we know, what can we reasonably expect? And what can be productive, right? Because
right.
there's a big difference, and often, this was definitely true within my own department sometimes, there's a difference between what do we do every day to cover our asses?
Right.
And what will be productive for this student, right? Because you can put an aide in a special ed classroom.
Well, that was what happened in my class, right? Yeah. I mean, it was, here's what we do every day, but it wasn't at all productive, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it didn't actually contribute
right.
to increasing my ability to teach that kid.
Right, and those meetings, that meeting happened for that particular student with that one teacher. Did it happen with every teacher? No. Does it happen with every student of every teacher? Of course not.
Right,
and it happened that we were able to, in this particular instance with this student who was a special needs student, we were able to increase the amount of productive activity he had during the day. I guess what we're kind of driving at is, how do we make at least something like that, or at least how do we address that issue that
right.
you can't have that meeting for every student given every kind of learning style, that we're not going to be able to devote it because we flat don't have the manpower, nor do we have the hours in the day.
Right. Well, and so I wonder, has there in Sarah, in your class, has there been a conversation about the students doing this activity?
Yes.
Because I would imagine if you had teams of students looking at work and talk and going through those protocols in that way, that would be a fascinating experience, and then you would be able to collect so much more information.
Exactly, yeah, and it's a great sort of empowerment. I know a lot of times at the school that I taught at, students are students and teachers are teachers, and that's the way it is, and there's not a lot of gray area, there's not a lot of going back and forth between those roles, but I think one of the things I've learned here at Hugsy is definitely to encourage my students to become more of the teacher, mm-hmm. and for me to take more of a role as a student and be okay with that and learning beside them, not just teaching in front of them. And back to the protocols, there actually have been people who have taken this class in the past, and as their final project, they will actually take a protocol and do it with a group of students, and as young as 5 or 6,
mm-hmm.
Just because they can follow the directions, and what they're going to see and say is really quite fascinating.
Have you read, or I think we've talked about him before, but have you read David Perkins' Making Learning Whole?
No, I have not.
We've talked about it.
So. It's you pick it up.
Okay.
Spring break's coming up. Pick it up for spring break. You'll love it. But one of the examples he talks about, and this is comes out of Project Zero, is the idea of studio thinking,
mm-hmm.
And studio schools and studio classrooms. And it is that moment. And it is actually working with kindergartners and saying, looking at a painting and saying, what do you see?
Yep.
Why?
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
Or last semester, Sarah and Lauren Slidefoot said this beautifully, and it was, if something, and I'm going to butcher it because she said it beautifully, and now I'm going to try and paraphrase. If something seems strange to me, I must ask myself why. If something does not seem strange to me, I must ask myself why.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really interesting space to, and it's kind of asking those questions. I wonder, have you thought any, I mean, because you talked about wanting to be, or kind of seeing, envisioning yourself as a science department head.
Yes.
How do you move a department in, right? Because ideally it's not just you doing this in your classroom, but
right.
it is a way of thinking within at least a department or within a school. And Scott, you talked about that it was one teacher having that discussion, and
right.
it wasn't all of that kids.
Because for middle schools, the way it's structured, at least in many, many middle schools, is that it's a teaching team.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So it should be everybody moving in that direction.
Right.
So have you thought about that?
Yes, in fact, so I said that some people have used the final project to do these protocols with teams.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually going to go back to my school
really?
And run the protocol with some of the faculty there.
Oh, mm-hmm. really?
Yeah.
Nice.
I am. I just got the permission from the assistant head of school, the head of the upper school, the head of the middle school.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you anticipate there being teachers who are the ones in the back of the room with their arms crossed?
Well, with the protocol, you're either in or you're out.
Okay.
So you don't have to, say a lot, but you really have to be invested in the process.
Right.
So the faculty that are involved will be involved, which is good. So I don't have to worry about people who are the big naysayers who are just sort of wiping their hands of the situation.
Right.
But what I'm really looking for is to actually get teachers across disciplines, mm-hmm. because the idea that there is no monopoly on expertise,
right.
based on what they see in front of them, that in fact the insights and just looking at the work, not just where the work came from or what the student was trying to do, but looking at the work itself, can happen for anyone. And I think it's incredibly empowering for those teachers to recognize that they have value outside of their own discipline.
Right. It's that it's the English teacher who says, "Oh, I don't teach math," right, in the reasoning for not being able to figure out some sort of simple arithmetic.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or the math teacher who says, "I can't help you with this essay because I don't
teach
English."
You have an English teacher to do that.
Right, exactly.
So, I think that's a really fascinating, one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot over this past week or two, in terms of a monopoly on expertise, is kind of the almost reversal of this phenomenon, where somebody will, based on stature or institution or ego, or a variety of those factors or other factors, might say, "I know what's best because of what my experience is," mm-hmm. and like, "I think I know because I've taught for 20 years, or I've never taught, but I've gone camping," or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And I think this has the potential to happen a lot. I think it probably happens a fair amount at the Ed School. I've had conversations that have been geared by this phenomenon, of feeling like you know a lot about a thing because you have experience in it or something, and therefore not allowing yourself an amount of flexibility when it comes time to collaborate. Mm-hmm. And I know we've talked about, you know, the spirit of collaboration and things of that nature in previous episodes of this podcast, Learning Grounds.
Did you just plug what we're doing on what we're doing?
Yes,
oh, I should check that out someday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you're going at this from an external link, click on the iTunes icon. Look at our artwork that I spent hours making in Photoshop.
Beautiful.
I will make sure I do that.
Thank you. Yeah. No. It's. I'm fairly proud of being able to work around that without using Photoshop.
Well done.
Thank you. That's what I wanted. I just wanted a little.
Just. Every once in a while,
yeah.
Pat on the back.
Mainly because, and this is something completely separate, I'm going to paint a picture for those people listening. Everyone else has, of the three of us, a eco-friendly container.
A reusable mug,
except for me. And we have been doing this for how many weeks now?
This is number four.
Four weeks, and I have yet to purchase an eco-friendly coffee mug, which is embarrassing.
I'm going to take it a step further. How many years have you been drinking coffee?
Well, many.
Okay.
Many. But
so,
I have had, in some of those years, I have had my trusty
so you have an on and on again, off again
I have an on again, off again relationship.
Oh, I like that.
Certainly.
I think that's really interesting, though, the pointing out of feeling like we have these domains of expertise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And being willing to learn in other places, but right. not necessarily being willing to learn
in
the thing we think we know the most about.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is probably, I think, the point you were getting at, where we need to learn the most.
Right. Or at least, yeah, or where we want to be open.
Where we need to be really aware that we might take the stance of, oh, I already know that.
Right. I think where we should, not necessarily where we need to learn the most, but where we have to run the most danger of being shut off to new learning.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, that's yes. And I wonder how you do, how do you do that? One, for us, for students.
Yes.
I mean, that is not a subject that gets brought up in my classes. It, you know, it's never, you're a teacher, right? And
right.
so.
Right.
And so that's really kind of fascinating. And I'm taking a class at the Kennedy School of Government. I'm taking a class in the Arts and Sciences this semester. So I'm outside of my domain in many mm-hmm. aspects.
How's
and
that going?
I'm finding the learning to be different, mm-hmm. but I'm also finding the way I hear my peers to be different.
Can you talk more about that?
Snaps to that, because I totally agree with what you just said in my own learning.
There are such a larger variety of backgrounds, for one, in both of those cases, right? In the Kennedy School, not everybody did the same job.
Okay.
Right? And in the Ed School, by and large, everybody has
not everybody, but the majority of people have teaching experience, right? That is one of the jobs that most people have come from most recently.
Yeah.
Or they worked in a school, or they were connected to a school.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But if I'm in the school of government, being in the government doesn't mean you were in the same office, right? It was or part right. of the same fixture.
Right.
And you have a much higher percentage of international students, right? Mm. So that's really interesting. Different levels of coming out of their career, right? The average number of work years in the ed school is so low, right?
Yeah.
But you've got people coming from mid-career and a much right. higher percentage in the Kennedy
School. And that's actually a label at the Kennedy School.
Exactly.
It's a mid-career program.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's just the voices are the richness of conversation that happens there. I appreciate more. And I don't know if it's because I'm coming at it as an outsider or if it is because of the voices that are in the conversation. But how do you even throw that in, like, how do you create that in a faculty meeting?
Right.
I mean, and I think it's part of what you're talking about is take people outside of what they know.
Mm-hmm.
And ask them to do, one of my theories for professional development mm-hmm. is to, it's like, so Sarah, if you were on the faculty with me, I would say for 15 minutes, you're going to lead us in a conversation at the beginning of the faculty meeting about something that you love doing that has nothing to do with education. Mm-hmm. Right? And so then all of a sudden, you're probably going to pick something that the majority of us don't do.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, there is a genuine opportunity for learning because those defenses that we were talking about go down.
Right. Yeah.
But how do you do that with teaching is the thing. Like, how do you get people to say, I'm a pretty good teacher, and I want to learn more?
Because one of the things you did say that you're trying to do, which is really awesome, is to learn alongside your students.
Yes.
How would you promote that if you had to write a flyer for your when you go back to your if you were going to hold a meeting, mm-hmm. like with your old school, you know, a faculty meeting, for instance, how if you could do it in as brief a statement as possible.
Yeah, I'm
you've got 140 sudden, characters.
I'm all of a sudden very aware that
very
this is
aware.
Audio, and if I have any visuals, if I use my hands to describe something.
You have not seen my wild gesticulations when I'm trying to
I got
talk
nothing but the
bad.
Voice here.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. It's a good question. How do you go about helping people to understand that it's not just about the teaching but the learning, and that you have to be aware of both happening in the classroom for every individual there. And I think it's a conversation that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I would actually say I would probably do less talking. I would really start with a generative question that is, I just stuck that word in there.
Yeah.
I hope Tina
Word
Grosser,
up to Tina Grosser.
Yeah, I was listening. A nice generative question that and allow the faculty, maybe it's the science faculty that I'm working with, because I'm the chair of the science department now, and that's kind of cool.
Congratulations Thanks. On that promotion.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Are you making more money?
Yes.
Sweet.
I was hoping that would happen for you.
Yeah.
Thanks. And really talk about the goals of a class, and maybe even talking about when a class goes really well, what does that look like? And from that, getting to the idea of really having great conversations where I would imagine where the teacher doesn't have all of the answers and where the students are really piping in with their experiences and their stories to make it a rich experience for everyone.
It's interesting because what you're talking about mm-hmm. takes you back to that kindergarten painting, right? And so it's that asking of what does a really good classroom look like? And it's all about trying to find that common language.
Yep.
Right? Because we said that you're not in kindergarten, but you might be.
Right.
I mean, if you're a kindergarten teacher.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you might be trying to have that conversation and trying to generate it mm-hmm. with young people. People, in fact, younger than yourself, if you are the teacher in a lot of situations, the teacher by title. And yeah, that would be really interesting to, like, try and get there and be able to inhabit that space of being not a teacher or a student, but a classroom participant or member.
Yeah.
I have another question for you, completely off topic. I'm switching topics.
I'm ready.
You think you are.
So you organized a concert last weekend here at the school.
Yeah, she did.
Called Acapalooza.
You said it so nicely this time.
I've been practicing.
I know. You.
And I got to be the host, the MC.
Which I really appreciate.
Again. You did a fantastic job, by the way.
I was not searching for compliments, though. I realized that I set it up as though I was.
You did. That was what we call prompting.
But that was all to get to the point of saying that I got to take part and sit in on the sound check. And there were four different groups from four different graduate schools across the Harvard family, if you will. And one after another, they said, oh, this is the most well-organized event that I've been to. And big snaps to you for that.
Big snaps to you for that.
I was having a conversation about it with somebody else afterward. And I actually said that we had this conversation very briefly. I don't know if you remember. But I said, well, that's just classroom management. Right? I mean,
yes,
and that's what you were doing. You knew you were going to have this group of people to manage.
Yep.
You needed to move them from one activity to another so that everybody had some place to be at all times.
And they were going
to
be a cappella members, so you knew they were going to be a little rowdy.
Yeah, and so it was classroom management. Mm-hmm. And it got me thinking, and I was talking to our friend Paul, mm-hmm. And we were talking about the soft skills of teaching.
Okay, yeah.
And how amazingly marketable they are across many different fields.
So true.
Right? In the business field, what you did could make you a boatload of money for a yearly salary.
Zach is saying put it on your resume if you haven't already.
Well, no, but I'm saying that I don't think we would think of it that way.
No, absolutely.
And I think
not.
That it
You're
is not, and right. In the talking about teaching as a profession, we don't talk about those soft skills.
Right.
Yeah. And it is almost not even valued. Like, except for like track and slant and those things, like, and that's, but that isn't the same thing,
right,
as what you were doing, right? Everybody's purpose was authentic in that room.
Mm-hmm.
How do we value that more? I guess this is more of a kind of a bigger question, but it was something that I learned from watching you was to think about this moment.
Zach, you're making me blush.
I'm not. Don't lie.
It's not the hot chocolate, man.
Nor was it the rum that he produced.
Yeah. But how do we talk about those soft skills, or how do we get appreciation for the soft skills of teaching? Not even externally, but within the teachers. Because I don't think teachers appreciate what they do. They maybe complain that people don't see it, but I don't think they appreciate it themselves.
Right.
Does that make sense, what I just said?
I think that there's a great deal of isolation that happens in teaching. You know, we all have our classroom and we're all going about our business, and if your students are staying in the classroom and if your students come out with smiles, you know, people assume that things are going well. But there's not a lot of cross-classroom collaboration. There's not a lot of just sitting in and watching and learning from people across disciplines or even within your own.
So you're saying we would appreciate it more if we saw other people saw us doing it?
I think so.
Because I've always thought about it as me learning by watching somebody else, but I never thought about the idea that I'm validating what they're doing by watching them do it.
Which is, I think, very often if there is, and this is just comes from my own experience as a teacher, when there was a, you know, an extra person in the room, for any reason, it might be a parent or an administrator or somebody that was extra.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't usually there. Very often, they were there with an agenda.
Okay.
Right? And the agenda may have been, as a parent, like I'm looking out for my particular student or my child and how their day goes, you know, what their school day is like. Or it may have been an administrator. I'm here to, you know, supervise and or kind of check out a teacher or a student or whomever. But agenda never in the classrooms that I was a part of was ever about I'm going to watch what's happening in terms of the dynamic or the organization or any of those sorts of method simply to appreciate how it's being done.
Right.
Yeah.
And because I think that's a great idea to bring somebody or a group of people into a classroom being as much fly on the wall as they possibly can be, have them sit down and watch how a teacher manages a group of students or a group of people and take notes on what's great about that teacher and what they're observing that's amazing and honed, even if the teacher doesn't know, it may be subconscious, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
And then writing those things down as an outside observer and then taking that to serve as a sort of cornerstone of professional development or what have you,
right,
you know, to the next faculty meeting. I think it would be amazing.
And I think it is also an interesting piece of what doesn't happen in the conversation when we talk about test scores, right? And yes, that oftentimes, like, I've seen some amazing teachers whose students scored quite high across the board, mm-hmm, on standardized tests. And it was all about the kind of activities that those teachers did. But in the specific models I'm thinking of, you also walked into that classroom and knew you were cared for from the moment you stepped through the door.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that I want to work harder on whatever it is I'm working on in the presence of someone who cares for me.
Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about what that looks like when we mechanize teaching.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We make it formulaic.
How do you say, okay, create a level of care?
Right.
Right?
You want your students to trust you.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
And that often, like, okay, so how do I mechanically do that? You don't lie to them. Right? That's the best way to make it so your students trust you.
Right. Well,
but that's not how you make people trust you.
Right.
Not lying to them. I mean, that's not why I trust people.
Like, right.
Well, you haven't lied to me before. That is a factor of it.
Right.
So, but I love that idea of just sitting and saying, here are the great things that I saw you do in the classroom. Right? And you don't have to be the best teacher in the building for me to do that.
Absolutely.
But think about how that changes our thought process around what we do.
Yeah.
If part of what we do is sitting and finding great things that are happening in the classroom.
Even in a classroom that doesn't work really well,
right?
You could do this, right? There could be a classroom that has significant problems. Maybe the teachers, the demonstrated test scores from the class in general are low,
right?
But they just go in and watch what's going on with the dynamic,
right?
And see what is working well, because generally speaking, in a group of people, I can find something that I like about that group of people in terms of the social dynamic, in terms of If a teacher
not something
is trying,
you like, keep it objective.
Fair enough. Something that works on some level.
Okay.
Even if I don't like it, there's definitely things that work on some level that I don't like, for whatever reason, because of my own opinions. But I think that that's possible across the board, whether a teacher is, you know, demonstrating quote unquote success with their standardized test scores,
right,
or not. And it would change.
Okay. You didn't mean what you just said, though. Teachers demonstrating success with their standardized test scores.
Yes, I didn't mean that. Right. I didn't mean my
students generating.
Yes. Yes. It's just the coffee.
I just didn't want that on record.
Right.
For
no,
you.
Yeah. No. I appreciate that.
Scott thinks teachers are successful when their scores are on.
Yeah.
Track.
Yeah.
You
threw me off track.
So even though they're having success that we don't, then that you might not.
Oh, yeah. I think it can entirely change the conversation up to the levels of culture that we are or media that the average person is now exposed to in the way that we're having conversations about education.
Right.
Which I think would be really productive in helping classroom members feel more appreciated, whether it's teachers or students,
right?
And making them feel cared for. I think there's a really interesting problem, or maybe it's not a problem, but it's an issue that I find fascinating about the fact that we are on TV saying to children effectively who are watching television, "You're failing," right?
Well, not just children. We're saying it to everybody.
We're saying it to everybody.
Anybody associated with the school.
And so. Particularly, I'm thinking particularly about students, or I mean children, but students in this case, like, they see on TV somebody that's supposedly a figure of authority or knowledge or something, you know, the president or some secretary somewhere, saying, you're not doing a good job.
Right.
And that can't feel good.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
And it doesn't.
Right.
I mean, because it's been said about teachers and students and schools and insert here.
Yeah.
And how are you going to... But you... Okay. I'm doing horribly. I would love to do better for you.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for the update.
Sarah, what did you do? How did your kids know that you cared for them in the classroom?
Excellent question.
So many good questions on this podcast. Jeez.
Professionals, again.
Well, so I come from many educators in my family, which is one reason why I thought in undergrad that I would never be an educator, because I wanted to be different and put my stamp on the world in a different way. But of course,
Life is
funny like that, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up hearing a lot of stories from my grandparents about their classroom management, and it always seemed that they were able to have great conversations with their students outside of the classroom. And I think that's where it really starts for me, is finding what my students are really interested in, and understanding that it might not be science. As much as that breaks my heart, they are going to have things that they are very passionate about at the beginning of the year, and I want to get to know that, and I want to see where that takes them over the course of the year. So really being able to have those conversations is really key. I'm also in a unique situation at boarding school, because I see my students in the classroom, in the dormitory.
You're in their life.
At dinner, at breakfast, on the playing field. So I can really... That gives me more opportunities for that, which I really am thankful for.
So you're a third generation teacher, or fourth, or?
Third, I'd say.
That's
I'm
awesome.
Sure. There's probably someone like my grandfather's family.
Right, but in a row. I mean, you've got a string of three generations of teachers. That's pretty fantastic.
I go with educators.
We're gonna go with
educators. My parents were not in a classroom. My mother's in a school. She's in admissions and all that. But
that's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Guess what?
You're out of coffee.
I just finished my coffee.
Mm.
So that means we have to wrap up
with
what we learned this week. Scott, do you know what you learned this week?
I was hoping you weren't going to ask me first.
I was just asking if you know.
Not yet.
Okay,
I'm
Sarah?
Think about it.
I've been thinking about it, because I was fortunate. I got prompt.
Yeah.
This would happen.
Yeah.
Scott, I'm surprised, because you've been doing this for 4 weeks, so you've had the prompt for a while too.
It's because that's come on.
She's sassing you right
that
now.
Is so rough.
You just got sassed.
I was so engaged with what you were saying that I wasn't.
Well,
he's good.
He's
good.
Out of that hole.
So, you're now buying time. What did you learn?
I don't think we don't know what you're going on right there. You're just trying to throw me under the bus. Jeez.
So I've been doing my internship at the aquarium, and I'm in the education department, and I sit at a desk and look at a computer screen creating curriculum for the aquarium, and I know that I do not want to be behind a desk and looking at a computer for the majority of my career life.
That's an important thing to learn.
It is. Mm-hmm. And that community for me, and being able to be a part of the community where I am working, is very important. So building those relationships and that. We're writing these journals for FEP, they've actually been very helpful in recognizing that that's a theme that I always write about.
It's nice when the learning works the way it's supposed to.
Yeah, it's great. And when you have a teaching fellow who is aware enough to say, this has become a theme for you.
Right. I've noticed some things.
Exactly. So, good job, teaching fellow. Thanks, Rachel.
Awesome.
That's what I've learned.
Scotland?
Okay, I'm ready.
All right.
I'm ready. In fact, I'm so ready that I thought of several things.
Wow.
Yeah. Firstly, I learned today that L&T, Learning and Teaching, has two strands.
I think I was here when you learned that.
Yeah, you were. I didn't know that before, like an hour ago, and now I do. And I also learned a few things other than the strand thing, which is not so cool.
Wait, what?
Well, I mean, it's really cool. No, it's just like it's not as exciting as the next thing I'm about to say.
Okay.
Even though it's really awesome. She's trying to get me. The Akapalooza was this week, and I did an arrangement for a piece, which got a great reception. People were really excited about it. The acapella group, of which Sarah is a member, did an amazing job. Zach emceed the show, and he did an amazing job. So I learned, and beyond that, so many people from the community of the Ed School came out in support of that show. And I was like really, we had like a packed house. And
I was so excited.
It was really exciting. And I learned anew, even like, and I learn more every week, how supportive and and amazing our community at the Ed School is, and that I wouldn't have it any other way. So that was really cool this week.
That's so nice.
Thank you. Thank you. It took me a rotation of to Sarah for me to think it up. So
that's okay.
Thank you.
I mean, it's good that it's that close to the service. Yeah. I have two things, too. Excellent. One is a physical task, and the other is a fact. I'm reading this book by a guy named David Sobel called Place-Based Education. And he talks about this program in Scandinavia. Preschool, 60 to 80% of their time is spent outdoors, and it's in rural and urban communities. And so they're out all the time. Like, doesn't matter what the weather is, they're going to be outside. And in children with these programs, the rates of infectious diseases 80% lower than their traditional school counterparts.
Wow.
Wow. Kind of
fascinating thing.
That's fascinating.
Other thing is, I had my first guitar lesson this week.
Oh, wow.
I learned how to play a C chord.
That's outstanding.
Well done.
C is one of the good ones.
Yeah, it is. Right now, it's my favorite.
Yeah.
It's made up of only the good notes.
That's what I've learned.
Yeah.
So, all right, that's it. That wraps up. Sarah, thank you very much for joining us this week.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Listeners, thanks for listening.
Yeah, if you've made it this far, I'm impressed by you.
Yeah, really just snaps to you. Snaps to you.
So, thanks for spending another cup of coffee with me, Scott.
Thank you, Zach. It was a delicious one.
Aw. All right. We'll talk to you next time.
This has been Learning Grounds. Go!
Thank you for listening to Learning Grounds with Scott and Zach. Our intro music comes from New Dance Boys Mission. It's called Intro, and it's licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license. Learning Grounds is also under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license. Say it 3 times fast. And thanks for listening.